having been there a few times as a delegate, the lobby.
Hang on a second. Well, you've kept this completely buried forever.
Well, only ever as an underage delegate.
So, well, what does an underage delegate mean?
Someone that's not 60.
Yeah, exactly.
OTB AM. Live. Weekday mornings from 7:30 on the OTB Sports app.
OTB AM. With Gillette. Put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.
Shane has been at Old Trafford and he's heading back. You're heading back on Sunday?
Back on Sunday, yeah, for the big game against Liverpool. So, yeah.
I am very firmly of the view that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer should no longer be at the wheel, and that every time United are half decent, that that's the evidence that it's time for this guy to be done. I think that, like, a lot of people are saying that, well, listen, you know, the biggest counter-argument to it is it's far better than what's gone before, right? Like, in terms of Mourinho and Van Gaal, and I was at some of those games myself, and some of them were absolutely turgid. So that's true and fair. But it's surely a law of diminishing returns in that, like, are they better than they were last month? Are they better than they were last week? It does feel as if he made a bit of he did make a bit of a jump in terms of progress, but it doesn't feel as if they're making a huge amount at the minute.
Yeah, and look, I can see that. I can see that point of view. And look, the phrase papering over the cracks has probably been used quite often with Solskjaer. Like, when he needs a big result, and he did on Wednesday, he tends to get it. And probably the same heading into this game against Liverpool on Sunday. You almost are more confident with the United team under Solskjaer heading into the big games than you are heading into the games against some of the lesser outfits. I'm not really calling Leicester or Everton lesser outfits, but those games where teams could actually get a result. Andy Mitten kind of touched on this the other day. Like, the reaction among fans in the stadium is probably different to the vitriol and anti Solskjaer Ollie out stuff you get online. But I can see both points of view.
Weren't there boos at halftime on Wednesday night?
There were quite loud boos that could be heard throughout the stadium as well. Like, definitely noticeable boos. But as Ollie was walking off, he was kind of trying to G the crowd up. The atmosphere at halftime was horrible. Everyone in the toilet, like, there was no one speaking to each other. It was absolutely the fans were just.
Does that not blow a hole in Andy Mitten's theory about the online thing versus, like, everybody's on a high when they're at the ground because United have come back unbelievably to, like, they look half time. You're like, what's this guy doing? Yeah. Like clapping on the crowd when they're booing him, and then, you know, everybody in the ground gets carried away with the fact that it's 3-2, but everybody at home can see that was get out of jail time.
Yeah, but I think what Andy's point was that he still got cheered off at halftime by the, you know, the Red Army, the real the standing singing, chanting end of the Stretford End, and that was something that kind of noticeably took me back as well. That the boos kind of lasted maybe for 10-15 seconds, and then it was overtaken as he was walking off the pitch and the team were walking off the pitch by more of a come on, like let's get this going again. And when they came out of the second half, and as soon as the Rashford goal went in, the entire atmosphere changed. And look, from 2-1, everyone in the stadium probably expected United to go on and win. But, like, he's taken that team from, look, in his 3 years, sixth in the league to third in the league to second in the league. He's made the big signings now with Varane, Sancho, Ronaldo. To not win a trophy this year and to not take the team forward would be disastrous and would spell the end for Solskjaer, let's be honest. But I'm probably slightly different to other United fans who are calling for his head after every single game. I probably think he's earned the right to get this team to the end of the season and see where he takes them.
Limp on, Jen, is what you're saying. This will be fine. Limp on to the end of the season. He's too much of a legend. Look what he did for us over the years. You know, he's the one responsible. Ronaldo, I mean, whatever.
Well, I know when I say this now, as people are going to be viciously typing, every time I say something positive about Solskjaer on this show, people viciously start typing and saying, what are you talking about? Rose-tinted glasses, United fan, isn't seeing this clearly. But the reality is, who's out there to replace him right now? And you cannot, like, Mike Phelan's got a new contract recently.
That is a damning indictment, Shane. What better is out there?
Well, it has to be considered. But
what you're saying is he should go, but there's just not somebody there to replace him right now.
I don't think he should go this very, like, well, certainly the character they showed in the second half the other day is encouraging, but recently performances have, like, the Leicester game, to concede 4 goals at the King Power Stadium was atrocious. Solskjaer will know that and the fans will know that, but I don't think you want to become a sacking club. You want to give managers a bit of a chance. You might say Solskjaer's had a chance now 2.5-3 years, and that is a fair assessment, But I think to sack a manager mid-season when he's trying to do something, and when clearly he's not going to be sacked until the end of the season because his coaching team have got new contracts recently to match Solskjaer's contracts. The hierarchy are happy with him. It's not going to happen. So I think the more fans realise it's not going to happen until the end of the season anyway, I think they need to get behind the team. But look, if results go south between now and Christmas, of course that conversation's going to change and Solskjaer's job will be even
listen,
more risk.
Like when Liverpool beat United at the weekend, I've a penny for your thoughts, Shane. That's, you know.
Yeah, like if they beat them 4-0 or 3-0, like, and which, by the way, could well happen,
could happen.
Given the way Liverpool are playing, you certainly have to reassess things. Like,
yeah. I mean,
it's game by game. We take it one game at a time, Adrian.
I'd be looking for your, as I said at the top of the show, I've been following your social media channels and keep me busy living vicariously through you and your appetite to get to United games. But I definitely a penny for your thoughts if Liverpool beat United at the weekend. I think, and it is a possibility, they've United's propensity to leak goals. Daniel Harris, good morning to you.
Hello.
We've been just discussing and debating. Shane, who's on the line there, was at Old Trafford at the weekend. He's going during the week. He's going again at the weekend. We've been having a lot of conversation with Andy Mitten on yesterday about the boo boys online, essentially, versus all the really committed United fans in the stadium and the difference that exists there. Is that your reading of it as well, that everybody that's paying to go to these games is fully behind the manager?
Fully behind the manager. I mean, I can't speak for everyone, but I would say most people are fully behind the manager when the game's taking place. It would be wrong to say that all matchgoers think that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is the right man to manage United, because that's not true. And I think there are a lot of reasons to be having significant doubts. The Europa League final was probably not the final straw, but the point at which people thought this is never going to get as good as it needs to. And what we've seen over the course of the season has reinforced that idea that perhaps at the very top level, Ole's a bit short. But the hatred for him, for one of United's heroes that you see online, is extremely bizarre indeed. And is the kind of thing that you tend to see from people that haven't watched United play before.
Well, it's always the danger, isn't it? It was always the danger with him coming back, with any legend of a club when he comes back and he's putting his reputation on the line and all that sort of stuff. The point of the difference between the fans in the stadium and the fans online, he was booed at half-time, wasn't he? Wednesday night.
Was he booed, or were people expressing of dissatisfaction with the team?
And what's your view on that?
Which, I don't know, but because I wasn't doing it. But what I said to you before is that not everyone in the ground is totally behind the manager. But if you look at the way that the crowd were in the first half, and particularly in the second half, but all the way through the game, that tells you that there is a consensus that when the game's taking place, people are behind the manager, whatever doubts they may have about his long-term suitability for the job.
What's in terms of that? Because look, that is the one of the only shows in town when it comes to United at the minute. Is he the right fit or not? And like the point we were making just a bit earlier on is that, of course, he's progressed the team since what's gone before, but it's a law of diminishing returns, isn't it? It doesn't seem as if there's a huge amount of progress month on month.
I mean, I wouldn't exactly look at progress month on month, because football's a chaotic game and things happen during a game of football. So I wouldn't look at it month on month necessarily. And I certainly wouldn't look at it game by game as people are trying to force other people to do, but rather as a body of work. And I think like the body of work is not bad up till now, but the question is whether Ole can take United the rest of the distance. And we're probably going to have a good idea about that in the next few weeks. So if you're asking me personally, I think what I've seen since the beginning of the season, I guess, makes me think that he's not going to get there. But if he wins the next five games, then I'll see that differently. And there's a big game at the weekend. United have done pretty well against Liverpool under Ole. Like, they haven't won as many games as they ought to have done, but they haven't been beaten badly. Have they lost at all? They lost at home at Old Trafford at the end of last season, which is a game that they really ought to have won, and is a game that they could come to regret, because it helped Liverpool get in the Champions League, which actually happened at the end of 2004-05. The last time United played Liverpool, actually, the game wasn't on telly, which tells you how crap both of the teams were then. Liverpool won 1-0 at Old Trafford with a penalty, and that qualified them for the Champions League, which they then went on to win. But anyhow, as far as it felt like the other night was a bit different to the game against Villarreal, although people seem quite eager to lump them together as games United shouldn't have to win in the style that they won them. The Villarreal win was a robbery. They scored two lovely goals, United, but they could have been absolutely battered before they got on the score sheet because they're absolutely dreadful in the first half and they found a way to make it happen. And that is a laudable characteristic, but it's not one that's going to sustain you over the course of a season or even over the course of a few weeks. But I don't think Atalanta was like that. Although United were 2-0 down at half-time, I thought they'd been the better team in the first half. They may have been too open, and Paul Scholes was especially critical of the performance, and he was probably watching it from a different angle to me. So he definitely has something to say about that. But it felt like Atalanta had scored from two dreadful defensive errors. So obviously they deserved to be ahead because United handed them the lead. But in terms of the general play, it felt like there was much more intensity and much more enterprise about the way United were going about it, and wasn't particularly surprised that they were able to turn it around. And the way they turned it around was really good. So if you look at what they changed in order to be able to do that, you would hope that at some level some lessons have been learned, because you saw that the main change I felt was that Bruno Fernandes was playing a bit deeper. And because he was playing so far forward previously, it meant that United, although they were nominally playing three men in midfield, they were getting outnumbered and they weren't asking enough of the wide players to cover. So the two midfield players were getting pulled apart everywhere. Once they dropped Bruno in there, and it also felt like the wide players got a little bit more involved defensively, that suddenly gave them a base from which to build. And it also meant that Ronaldo was able to press a bit better because he had more idea of what was going on behind him. And then you saw a team that are a problem for anyone, even though it was only Atalanta, who before the game we were led to believe were a really good team. And then as soon as United smashed them in the second half, it was only Atalanta again. But it felt like if United played like that against Liverpool, it won't work. But if they use some of the second half changes against Liverpool, then they've got a chance, because the defenders are capable of defending much better than they have been. The midfielders are able to run around a lot and they've got goals in the team.
Daniel, is it almost like a lose-lose for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer at the moment? Like you point out things like the I guess bad record they have from defending and attacking set pieces. Some of the performances in the first half from the players, and that's probably, you've made a good point. Like the booing, a lot of it was directed towards maybe the players as opposed to the manager necessarily. But I think if Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, from his point of view, you know, that second half can be seen from one side as you know, a strength of character, a show of morale under Ollie, that a comeback like that can happen. But on the other hand, a lot of fans are saying it just papers over the cracks. So is it a case of lose-lose situation for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer at the moment?
No, I don't think so. You'd have to be quite strange to say that losing that game, to say that winning that game was in fact losing that game. I don't think so. I don't know if it's papering over the cracks, because United are a good team. And they played like a good team in the second half. And that's surely what people want to see, what people expect to see. They went in 2-0 down and they came out and they turned it around. And what else can you do? And you don't, that can't become the norm that you wait to go behind. And it has sort of become the norm with this team. And that is a problem. But it depends if they learn from what happened. And there have been incremental improvements all the way through over Solskjaer. And the reason why I personally am getting to the point where it feels like it's not going to change is because there are particular aspects that ought to have changed by now and haven't. It's not because they were able to turn 2-0 into 3-2. It's that, is anything going to change in the long term? And we don't know that until we see it. And I think that you also got players that are starting to settle in now. It felt like the game against Atalanta was by far Ronaldo's best performance for United. The effort that you put in running around and the way that he linked up with the other players was by far the best we've seen from him in the time so far. And I think that's to be expected. It takes someone time to adjust. And there's been a lot written and a lot spoken by people basically saying that Cristiano Ronaldo is finished, that Juventus got worse when he signed them rather than Juventus were a team on the tail end anyway and with crap managers. So that was kind of blamed at Ronaldo. Then United signed him. And I'm not saying that his unwillingness to press isn't something that needs to change. But what I'm saying is that if you give Ronaldo the correct service, look at that ball that Luke Shaw put in for him at the end of the other night, then he will score goals. And the way that Ronaldo performs, to me, is much less a function of how much pressing he does and much more a function of a coherent team behind him. And when we saw a coherent team behind him, and I don't just mean the second half, I mean for the 90, I felt like we saw a much better display from Ronaldo. And the thing that really changed in the second half, apart from Bruno's position, was United's final ball was a bit better. They missed loads of great opportunities in the first half, but also they messed up loads of great situations because Bruno kept picking the wrong pass. And him in particular, not just him, but mainly him. But the thing that we see with Bruno is that one of the most impressive things about him is that however many times he's tried a risky pass and it hasn't come off, he'll try it again. And if you see the goal that he scored for Marcus Rashford, there was a still going around on Twitter yesterday of his body position, the position of the ball and the position of Rashford before he played that pass. And the pass doesn't look on. It looks impossible that he can put the ball into space in behind. But because he continues to try those risky moves, he managed to put it off and United equalised. And I think that what he had was, because he had Fred and McTominay behind him, he got a lot more of the ball in those situations than he had been doing previously. And it meant he had a lot of opportunities to keep trying those things. And I think that's what United really need to take away from there, that Bruno can't play like a centre-forward and he can't play like Dwight York used to play or Wayne Rooney used to play off the centre-forward, because you will then lose games in midfield. If he plays deeper, he'll get the ball sometimes a little bit deeper, as he did for that Rashford goal, but he still has the ability to turn something into a killer pass, particularly against teams that play high lines, and Liverpool play a high line. And also, Virgil van Dijk is still getting his way back after that big injury that he had, and Liverpool conceding quite a few goals this season. So that'd be an area that United should be looking to target, I think, on Sunday.
I mean, it could be a fair assessment to say that, like, Bruno Fernandes perhaps played slightly better on Wednesday as well when Paul Pogba came off the bench. And that Pogba question is a conundrum that's going to follow Solskjaer and United around until the new contract situation is solved one way or the other. But what's your thoughts on Pogba at the moment? Like, is there a place for him in this? Obviously, when he plays, he's to the best of his ability. He is world class. But in terms of his best position, like, a lot of people think maybe wide left is a waste for him. Maybe sitting deep doesn't get the best out of him. I mean, what's your thoughts on the Pogba situation at the moment?
I thought he did quite well when he came on at the weekend. I wouldn't be starting him in big games, because in big games against teams who you're going to have to really fight with in midfield, there's not room for him and Bruno, unless you play a four-man midfield, a diamond or something. And if you do that, an extra man in midfield, then you're limiting yourself to two of Ronaldo, Greenwood, Cavani, and all the rest of them. So I wouldn't do that. But if you're making me choose between Bruno and Pogba, then to me, that's just no choice whatsoever. It's Bruno every time. And the other thing is that Pogba hasn't committed himself to the club. And if you're trying to build a team for the next few years, then putting your faith and giving appearances to someone that isn't going to stay is not something that I personally would do. And the other thing is that Pogba did get used on the left last season, but I don't think he's a better left winger than Marcus Rashford or Jadon Sancho or even the Mason Greenwood. So I would personally be leaving Pogba on the bench and using him as an impact sub in these games, unless they're very specific circumstances. So if Fred is injured, because Fred went off the other day, I thought Fred actually played really well. But if he's not available, then you have to think about what you're going to do. And maybe then you do use Pogba. But the problem with Pogba is always, it's the discipline and it's the intensity. And if he plays with discipline and intensity, then he should be able to sit in front of the back four and with Scott McTominay and patrol that area of the pitch. But you can't rely on him to be able to do that. So I wouldn't be picking him for these games. And I don't think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is going to pick him for these games either. If you look at United's best performances under Ole, the two wins at City, the two wins in Paris, Pogba didn't play at all in three of them. And he came off the bench in the fourth one, the win in Paris, where he actually did do quite well. But it's not a coincidence that that's the case, because United don't have one controlling midfield player who is physically good enough and with good enough passing to be able to allow you to play Pogba and Bruno. And we've all wanted to see it, and we've all tried to see it, and it's been tried a lot of times. And at some level, you have to say, this isn't working now. It's not going to work. Or at least it's not going to work often enough. So United could play a midfield of Bruno, Pogba and McTominay and beat Liverpool. They tried to do it against Liverpool last season and it almost worked. So it is possible, but you're looking at what is the most likely route to victory for United. To me, that's Pogba on the bench coming off if you need him later on, But United need to get themselves into the game. And if they play Fred McTominay and Bruno, then they've got the necessary agility and athleticism in midfield to compete and still plenty of players that can make a difference going forward. And that fifth player just alters the balance too much.
In terms of possible outcomes this weekend, Daniel, like it, when you surveyed the various options, United pretty leaky at the back, can't seem to keep a clean sheet. It's not exactly like Liverpool have been sort of really tight in that department themselves, but also have the propensity to score a lot of goals, as, to be fair, United do, as they showed on Wednesday night. One of the possible outcomes here, like, Liverpool are looking good. They look kind of like they're back. And one of the possible outcomes here is a few goals to nil on the Liverpool side. What's your thinking about which way this pans out?
I don't think it'll be a few goals to nil. Any result is possible. There's not that much between the teams. If United turn up and play at their best level, they might still lose. If Liverpool turn up and play at their best level, they might still lose. But if United turn up and play the way that they've been playing, they would almost definitely lose. But they've got players who can do it in big games. I think they need to hope that Marcus Rashford's back, because I think of all of them, he is the most reliable big game player. The one who's done it the most often against Liverpool, against Manchester City in the European games. So they need to hope that he's available because he has that sense of timing. But I think that all results are possible. Mo Salah hasn't generally done that well against United. I think that Luke Shaw, in general, has done pretty well against him. However, he hasn't played that well this season. But I think that Liverpool's weaknesses don't play in that badly to United's strengths, because their fullbacks want to get forward. And if United's wide players can either exploit the space in behind or force them backwards, then Liverpool might struggle to create. But Liverpool do have the runners and the people and the players that can press to do United in midfield and to stop United getting out. So United will need to have an answer for that. And Fellaini is no longer one that is available to them. So they need to find a way of playing out, and they've got themselves into trouble playing out in the past. So they need to play well. If they play well, they won't win, but they have more than enough to cause Liverpool difficulties. So I think it should be a really good game.
Can I just ask you one last one on Solskjaer? Because it is an interesting talking point. And I see Scholes was saying in one of the papers this morning that, and I'm sure they've probably taken the quotes from BT or somewhere like that, but he was talking about the respect that the players at City and Liverpool have for their manager, and he isn't sure. He's questioning whether that still exists for United. And I think that those who are pro Solskjaer are saying the jury's out. Like a game like Sunday, the jury is surely coming back in after a game like that. At what point would you start to question whether Solskjaer is the right man for the job?
People have been questioning it all along, and anyone sensible has been questioning it all along, because although he got the job by doing the job, so he has showed some level of ability, and he's also showed some level of ability previously, until you prove that you're good enough by winning trophies, by challenging for titles, then people are going to ask questions about whether you're good enough. And I'm not going to make up my mind based on what I see at the weekend, but you could make up your mind based on what we've seen until this point. If United get walloped at the weekend, it's not going to look good. But if United win at the weekend, I'm not suddenly going to say, well, actually, Solskjaer's as good a manager as Klopp and Guardiola. I mean, the difficulty for him is that's what he's competing with. And it hasn't usually been the case that United or any team is competing with in their league with the two best managers in the world are there. It happened when Mourinho and Ferguson were there, where the two best managers were managing English clubs. And that is the case now. And Tuchel's also really good. So not being as good as them is not a massive insult. But at the same time, if you're managing Manchester United, you do need to be as good as them. But the problem that I think about is if United fired Ole, let's say they fired him today, who would you go and get who you would be certain would be as good as those guys? And people will say Zidane and people will say Conte. Definitely don't have much faith that Zidane is anywhere near as good as those guys. Conte's slightly different. We know that Conte's really good. The problem with Conte is whether you would bestow a squad with such beautiful attacking diversity on a manager like Antonio Conte for him to fall out with people, even if you did manage to win a title, which you may or may not do, and then leave a mess subsequently. And one of the problems with United over the period has been bringing in managers who are different to the manager that went before. So what they come in and they don't like the manager that they've been left. So they sell players they should keep, like Van Gaal did. He got rid of Rafael, he got rid of Johnny Evans, he got rid of Hernandez. And you replace them with Rojo and with Falcao and with Darmian, who were crap. And you don't want to bring in another manager who's going to do that, who's got a particular idea of how he wants to play that's different from the idea that the previous manager had. And then suddenly you think that you start selling good players and buying other players, and then that manager goes, and all of a sudden you think, well, what do we do next? So you want to avoid that. And I can't see an obvious candidate. I think if they can hang on till the end of the season, then perhaps they might be able to get Maurizio Pochettino, who, though he's making a massive bollocks of it in France, the squad that he has in Paris is not such a good squad for him, whereas the squad he would inherit at United is a squad that you could see him doing a good job with. But I would still like to see what Ole does over the next few weeks before I started making my mind up. Though, if you ask me if I think that he's going to be good enough, I guess the answer is no now, because I feel like I personally have seen enough and seen the same things repeating. But given where we are in the season and given the fixtures that are coming up, we may as well wait another few weeks to see how United get on in those games, because over the course of the last 3 years, he's improved and he's learned some stuff. So we may as well wait and see if he's learned enough more stuff to make things a little bit better and as better enough as they're going to need to be.
Yeah, I always think when you're into a conversation about is there somebody else who's immediately available who's good enough to replace this guy, that it's only headed one way. Very quickly before we wrap, your prediction for Sunday?
No, I don't know. I mean, if you're forcing me to say, I'd say I think United will win 3-2. Okay. But obviously, feel free to hit me up when you get bad 17-0.
We'll do exactly that next week. Good man. Enjoy.
There you go. Have a good weekend, everyone.
Thanks a lot, Daniel Harris there, and from the United Rewind. And interesting stuff as always, particularly about Paul Pogba. I think you'd have to say that is interesting. The jury perhaps coming back in on Paul Pogba. Plenty of comments coming in. Let me speak for every non-United fan, says Dennis O'Connor on YouTube. And good morning to you, Dennis. Hashtag Ole in. There seems to be a fair bit of that sort of tongue-in-cheek stuff going around. And Shane Hannon, Will is wondering, why is Hansen, he calls you here, dressed like a Bond villain? Which is an entirely legitimate question.
Well, the film came out recently. I guess it's only a fleece. It's only a fleece. I think it's not a tuxedo or anything here. It's I've got no cat on my lap. So Bond villain. I'm not a very good Bond villain.
Somebody else on YouTube, Ronaldo has messed up the squad camaraderie that Ole had built up before his arrival, and now it's seeping into the rest of the squad, says conspiracy theorist on YouTube. Ronaldo's a major problem. I kind of feel sorry for him.
Yeah, he just scored a winner in a Champions League game, and he's the problem. I mean, some of the people online are just you can never keep everyone happy, but he's the PE teacher to the opposition fans, I think. And you mentioned the tongue in cheek there; they all want him to stay in the job. I think there's a bit of tongue in cheek in that, but I think what Daniel is saying there makes sense. Look, the next few weeks will tell all. We all are kind of reserving judgment on him massively until this kind of tough run of games is out of the way. So Christmas, I think, we'll know more.
Yeah, the jury for me is back in. Shane, you guys, you got to move on to the next one. Right, myself and Shane with you until 10 this morning. It's time to turn our attention back to events at Tala last night. The Republic of Ireland 0, Sweden 1. Karen Duggan, good morning to you.
Morning.
We've had a chance now to sleep in it. In your view, a good night's work or an opportunity missed?
A good night's work. I think Sweden are second in the world. We had to be realistic about that. I don't think Sweden will drop any points in this group. I would be surprised. And we did go toe-to-toe with them for a long time. We rode our luck a bit in the first half, but that's going to happen against teams that are ranked ahead of you. They have some Rolls-Royce strikers up there. Some of their movement was absolutely phenomenal. And we kept it to 1-0. It tells a story when your goalkeeper is player of the match. That's the type of game it was, the type of game we expected. But we held our own and we've improved. When we played Germany in the last qualification campaign, we were conceding 3 goals. And in the first half, in that first game against Germany, it looked like it could have been 6 or 7. So there's marked improvement there and they were a better shape. And it's something to build on. And that's the most important thing.
In the lead into the game, everybody was talking about trying to keep it tight, trying to not concede early, trying to get to 60, 70 minutes and then try to go for it. And that was exactly as it played out last night. So did Vera Powell get it very much right tactically?
She did. I think the shape was better. It allowed Denise and Megan to actually get a foot on the ball and join in the play, which they haven't been able to do when they've been playing 3 in the midfield. So I think that the shape was better given 4 in midfield. I think we had to play 5 at the back given the opposition threat. So I think we can employ that shape going forward against teams who aren't as good and just bring it further up the pitch. The gaps, as we started to tire between the midfield and Heather Payne, were always going to grow, and it made a really difficult night for Heather. But in a game where we'll have more possession and you'll see Katie joining in the attack, Lucy Quinn getting forward a bit more, hopefully we'll create more chances. And we know that we do have threat in those positions. We just need to be higher up the pitch. But we do need to maintain that discipline, because we can't forget that Finland are still ranked higher than us and do have some really good quality players as well.
There were certainly sections, particularly in the first half, where we looked fairly overrun in midfield, to the point that like Heather Payne had to come back to try and join in to support a little bit, which was having the knock-on impact and not having that out ball down at the end. Is there ultimately no way to kind of guard against that when you're playing a team of that quality?
I don't think so. I think when you've looked at Sweden and how they've played over the last year, I think I don't know how many goals they've scored, but when you look on their Wikipedia, it's green, 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 green. They had like 16 games unbeaten until an Olympic final. This is a top quality team. If I'm being honest, I expected us to lose by more going into this game. And I think you could take great heart from the fact that we did only concede that one goal. Yes, there were times where they got in behind us, but another positive is that our goalkeeper looks confident. And previously, throughout all of the friendly games we played over the last year, one of the talking points after the game was always the goalkeeper, who should be number one, mistakes that were made. And that didn't happen last night. So I think that that's one positive that came from us being overrun, is that Courtney finally got to show that she is a fantastic keeper. Her kicking was good. She looked really alert. She was vocal the whole way throughout the match. She was keeping her defence in line, particularly in the second half, when it would have been easy to lose concentration when you got tired. But I thought she did really well. So you have to look at the positives. I've been looking at a lot of the negatives over the course of all the friendly games up to the point of the start of this campaign. But if we are to build and beat a team like Finland, you have to look at those positives and tidy up some of the gaps that were there, but also keep the faith that you can go and beat a team like Finland. Now, they're only ranked, I think, maybe 7 places above us, so there's not that much between us when you think of the last two performances and how we played against Australia and Sweden.
Just on the keeper, Karen, Emma Byrne was making a point before the game last night. She was in the studio for us and she was talking about, she was a big fan of Grace Maloney in goal, essentially, and highlighting that Brosnan had maybe a mistake in her every now and then. But you've touched on it there, the evidence last night, very confident, big save on 35 minutes as well. Is that, I mean, who knows what happens in the next game, but that's pretty much that conversation locked off now for the foreseeable if she can continue in that type of form?
It seems to me, and I agree with Emma. I would have been in squads with Grace, and I was always a massive fan. I think she's a fantastic goalkeeper. But there must be a reason why Courtney is getting the nod over Grace, because Grace is starting for her WSL club while Courtney isn't. So there's something that's going on in camp which is saying that Courtney Brosnan is the right person to start in goal. So I think that has to be the end of the conversation, that we have to trust that Vera and Jan Zvillian, the goalkeeping coach, are selected and player who is best place to be the last line of defence for this team. Grace's WSL performances speak for themselves, so there's something we're not seeing, but I'm happy for Courtney. She needed a game like that, and it's important that you have a steady number one. We had Emma Byrne for the bones of 20 years, and we were always known as a defensive team that were solid. You didn't think that there was going to be ever too many sloppy mistakes from the goalkeeper, and that was because we had our captain and a solid character behind us for that long. And Ireland need that. They need consistency. It's been a very inconsistent up to the point of the last two games. We have looked shaky. There's been porous in defence at times and City mistakes. And we had one episode of it last night where Niamh Fahey got attracted to the ball. Louise Quinn at the same thing, and it left a wide open space. And it was unfortunate ricochet at the moment, but they probably deserved the goal given the pressure that they had put on us and the mistakes that we made in the lead up to that point.
Karen, would you say there was a positive to be taken from the fact that when Vera Pauw made that switch to the 5-4-1, Sweden kind of adapted themselves to that change? Like you'd almost see that as a sign of respect for a team as good as Sweden are. Maybe against perhaps lesser opposition than the Republic of Ireland, they wouldn't have bothered changing their system. But clearly, they showed a lot of respect to that Ireland team last night.
I think they had to in the last 20 minutes. In the first half, we were commenting because Heather was back so far that their defence never looked under any bit of pressure, and their midfielders weren't really bothering to track back because they didn't have to. And the second half, I think maybe they did come out a little bit complacent. And as we kept it to 1-0, I think they thought they were going to come out and bang in two or three more, but they didn't, because they didn't have that same urgency, that same movement and desire that they had in the first half. They just kind of were seeing out the game. And they nearly died on that sword. You know, obviously there was a few penalty shouts. I think their penalty shouts were stronger than ours, but at the same time, you never know what could have happened. We could have gotten one of those. There could have been a ricochet in the box, could have fallen to Louise Quinn when she was up front there for the last 10 minutes. But they rode their luck a little bit, and I think that is credit to us. I think more so for sticking it out, for only conceding the one goal. We were always going to try and push on then at the end. But look, they're fantastic. I think Eriksen at the back, in real life, she's probably one of the best centre-backs I've ever seen. She won every header that was asked for, even when she was marking Louise Quinn, and that's no mean feat. Her switch of play in the first half, her comfort on the ball. We were up against not only a potent attack, but a defence that don't look like they're going to concede much throughout this campaign.
One of the things that Adrian and myself spoke about at the top of the show this morning was the lack of goals with this Irish squad. And look, I was reading Brendan O'Brien in the Irish Examiner this morning, and he was talking about the lack of goals as well. And even last September, when we lost 3-0 to Germany, that it broke a record, 15th time in 16 games that we'd failed to score a goal against a side in the top 25 in the world. We saw similar, I guess, issues, and have seen similar issues with the men's team as well. Maybe Callum Robinson has changed that a bit recently. But like you've spoken on this show, like even earlier this year, I think, about the lack of our number 10, that maybe Katie McCabe is someone who should fill that void. But is that a concern for you, that the lack of goals in this squad at the moment?
It is, and it's to do with the shape that we play as well. We haven't been playing a number 10 who's had an opportunity to get on the ball and create. I think if we're going to start looking at goals, we do need to start looking at freeing up Katie a little bit more. And that means being a little bit less conscious at the back. It means not having Katie covering our full back. If we have five at the back, Vera, I'll call it three at the back, but when we play for Ireland, it's a five at the back. And when we have five at the back, we shouldn't need our winger or one of our midfielders covering as well. You should just allow the backs to defend, because we don't have, apart from Katie, that natural fullback who's going to be able to do that all day, because we don't have possession. We don't have enough possession. So you need someone who's going to create something out of nothing. And for me, that player is Katie McCabe. I'd like to see Heather up there doing all the chasing she can, and Katie just let the shackles off Katie a bit so that she can go and play her game like she used to do when she was younger, before she was captain, before she was rolled out to every single media thing. Just someone who's so naturally talented. I'd like to see her get a bit more of that. Obviously, when you play.
Does that happen, Karen? Sorry to cut across. Does that happen against Finland? Do you think that like last night was the night to play her in that position because she's so good and we need to keep it tight against Sweden, but like Tuesday night is the night to, and look at maybe Denise O'Sullivan's potential absence changes that too, but that maybe against a team where we might be expected to get something out of it, that she can be a bit more adventurous?
I think she can be more adventurous, but I don't think Vera will employ her in the 10. I think she was reluctant to even put her out of the left wing back position into the left wing position. Unfortunately, it's not what I'd like to see. I think she will be able to join in the attack more, and she'll be able to get crosses into the box, but I think she's better when she can go wandering for Ireland. Obviously, for Arsenal, it's a different story when she's feeding Vivian Medema, and you have Kim Little in the middle creating as well. So it's a completely different story at Arsenal. People often compare her form for Arsenal and what she should be doing for Ireland, but for Ireland, we don't have as many players who have as much of a natural attacking talent as her. Away to Finland is a really, really tough task, and it's important that we don't lose that game. I would take a draw against Finland. That might seem negative because we do want to qualify, but getting them back home with the chance later on in the year to beat them with 4,000 fans would be a massive advantage. And after that Finland game, we play against the lesser ranked teams. So it would be an opportunity to tweak the system a little bit again and maybe get Katie in the 10. So I probably wouldn't move her out against Finland, just because we do have to be somewhat reserved. We can go for it a little bit more, be a little higher up the pitch, but we can't afford to lose that game. So I think that we will stick to our defensive mechanisms that we have done to this point. Hope for our set pieces to be good. Hope that Heather can get on the end of some long balls. All of that will still be in place. But the games after that, that's when I think we need to show more ambition and start getting goals. And that's when I think you need to have one extra attacking player on the pitch. I think Leanne Kiernan's form is really good, and she can play on the wing. She has pace. So I think you could play her there and push Katie in centrally. Denise is a box-to-box player. She'll do every job on the pitch for you if she's fit. So I don't think you need to have her in the 10. I think you can afford to have her in the 8 with Megan Connolly sitting beside her and Katie in the 10 in front of her. And then two wingers who will join in the attack with Heather.
Yeah, we'll see what happens on Tuesday night. And Finland had a 3-0 win over Georgia last night as well, which must be a bit of a red flag for us. The United-Liverpool game, we better leave on a word on that. What's going to happen?
I'd say we'll be saying our prayers and lighting our candles as United fans, looking at the midweek performance. Obviously, the drama is great, but yeah, I've been watching Liverpool since the start of the season. They're not going to concede goals in the way that Atalanta did, and United don't look like they're going to shore up in any way. Seem to play better when they go a goal down, but that won't work against the likes of Liverpool. If they have a first half like they did against Liverpool, it could be 4 or 5 as opposed to 2, and there's no coming back from that. So yeah, obviously I think United will set up to hit on the counter, but I wouldn't be overly hopeful. Yeah. It's probably going to be an awful game because of the two crackers we had midweek in the Champions League. It would probably be a damn squib of a nil-all. I'd take a nil-all as a United fan at this stage just to kind of steady the ship a little bit.
It'll be 3-2 to somebody, absolutely guaranteed. Yeah. Karen, thanks a million.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Karen Duggan, reviewing the game at Tala last night.